Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. So good to have you with me on another day of Spiritual Perspectives as we continue to take a look at really at least a couple of major topics at the same time. One of them being whether or not we truly care about children. Do we really care about children? Children. You notice I'm just saying children now. Do we really care about children? Do we only care about children who are the same color that we are? Do we only care about our own children? And when you look at the way some people handle children, even their own, it's safe to assume that there are a lot of people who care little or not at all about any children. Do we really care about family? We have a lot of politicians who say they care about family. Is that really true? Or is that just rhetoric designed to get votes? One of the best ways to determine that is to look at the kinds of policies that politicians put into play that affect families and see how those policies affect families, whether they are families from our own community, families from our own state, families from our own nation, families from around the world, children from around the world. Do we really care? How does God intend for us to approach policy, politics? How does he want us to approach the handling of families, the handling of children? We've read it so many times, what he has to say about the handling of children, families, orphans, etc. So he's made it very clear in his written word how he wants us to approach the handling of families, the handling of children. In fact, isn't it interesting that one of the scriptures says that God places children in families? So whether we're talking about all biological family members, or whether we're talking about blended family members where maybe a man and a woman had children from, well, they each have children, but not all of them together. Maybe he had children from some other woman. She had children from some other man. They have their children. They decided, hey, let's get married. And they blended the two families. Maybe adoption is part of the picture. Maybe foster care is part of the picture. Family, children, do we really, really care about them? Do we come up with policies that truly strengthen the family, strengthen our children, that make life better for them? Or do we have people coming up with policies that are intended to make life more difficult for families, to make life more miserable for our children? Just before we go further into our discussion, as we focus on the pursuit of peace, the pursuit of peace, and as I've said before, with so many forces working so diligently and so persistently to make life miserable for so many, peace is something that definitely has to be pursued inwardly as well as outwardly. In our own hearts and minds and souls, we've got to pursue peace. And also with other people, we've got to pursue peace. Before we go further into the discussion, though, like I said, I want us to listen to a little bit of this song by Mark Harris entitled Find Your Wings. By the time it's all over, we will have heard all of it. But listen to a little bit now.
It's only for a moment you were mine to hold. The plans that heaven has for you will all too soon unfold. So many different prayers I'll pray for all that you might do. But most of all, I want to know you're walking in the truth. And if I never told you, I want you to know that as I watch you grow, I pray that God would fill your heart with dreams, and that faith gives you the courage to dare.
We've got to hear more of that. Wow. So powerful. So powerful. Our children, many of our children were ripped away from their parents at the border, the Mexico-U.S. border. That was the plan. Rip them from their parents and separate them. By hundreds and hundreds of miles, and don't even necessarily have a plan in place as to specifically when you will reunite them, if ever. What about the trauma to the souls, the minds, the hearts of those families, the parents and the children? Devastated, traumatized. And like I said before, part of the tragedy of this is not just that we have an administration that made that policy, but also that we have so many millions of fellow citizens all across our country who applauded that decision. They couldn't give you a whole lot of in-depth information as to what made that kind of activity, ripping families apart, justifiable. But just knowing that these families were ripped apart gave them great pleasure, great joy. They applauded that decision. Knowing that these families had been truly, truly hurt, devastated, traumatized, especially the young children, gave too many Americans, probably still continues to give too many Americans great pleasure, brought a smile to their faces, a smile to their hearts. What about that, ladies and gentlemen? Now, here's part of the question. Where do these children and their parents get their peace? How do they find peace? How do they discover peace? How do they experience peace? We still have many, many, many children who are still torn away from their parents, still don't know on any significant level where they are in the world. This is a huge world. I know a lot of people like to say it's a small world. I guarantee you, be 6 years old or be 4 years old and be ripped away from your parents and be taken away from them. You can't see their faces. You can't hear their voices. You have no idea where they are. They have no idea where you are. See how small you think the world is. As a four-year-old who has been ripped away from, torn away from their parents, and not sent to the room next to the one that your parents are in. You know that you were put on a vehicle and shipped away, put on some modes of transportation and sent away. And you know you didn't see either of your parents get on that same vehicle. And so here you are, somewhere in the world without your parents. Your parents in the world without their children. You see why we have to pursue peace? Because you have so many people who make these kinds of decisions, and you have so many people who applaud these kinds of decisions. You have people who, as I've said before, make it their business to pass laws that they know will make life miserable even for their own fellow citizens. Laws being passed that make it legal to keep the minimum wage way below where it should be. Some of you may recall that I was telling you years ago that the median income should be no less than $15 per hour just to keep up with the cost of living. But we have men and women who truly, truly, truly rejoice to oppress people. And so they pass the laws that make it legal to keep the minimum wage down, down, down. To make it legal to have people working 60 and 70 hours, but call them salaried. So that even though they're basically making minimum wage, because they're considered salaried, you can get them to work 60 hours, 65 hours per week, pay them minimum wage, and for no more than 40 hours for the 65 hours that they worked, because they're salaried and they have a title. And we have politicians who jump at the chance to pass those kinds of laws, making that kind of activity legal, knowing that it's going to make life miserable for so many people because they're going to be stuck, unable to get to earn a decent living. We're not talking about trying to make everyone rich, just having people's income stay a little above the cost of living. And believe me, there is enough money for people to be paid that way. Isn't it interesting that you have so many people in America who will basically fuss and fight and whine about the top 10%, the top 1% getting all the money that they get, but when the laws are passed that make it possible for all the money to be finding its way up to the top 10% and very little coming to anyone else, they applaud those laws. And they applaud the politicians who pass those laws. What is that all about? As I've said before, very often people think about what's happening to those people. And they're so focused on making sure that they vote for the people who are going to pass laws that will hurt those people that they become blind to the fact that they're also voting for the people who are going to make life more difficult for them. And we asked the question, December 2016, January 2017, March 2017, if the economy does not significantly improve, if people's incomes don't significantly improve within a year, who are the people who were so mad that they jumped at the chance to get Donald Trump in the White House? If their situation is no better a year after, 2 years after, He's been in the White House. Who will they be angry at? They scapegoated middle class and poor people of color during the 2016 campaign and blamed the people who were worse off than they were for their troubles. They did also partly blame some of the politicians. But isn't it interesting that they keep voting for the politicians who keep passing the laws that keep them in the situation that they're in? And so we have politicians who keep passing laws that make life miserable for people. How will these people find inner peace? How is it that we have so many people who have the mentality, who have the heart, the mindset to want life to be miserable for other people? And this is the way it's been for ages. This is nothing new. And it's something that has been common to many, many nations. And it just so happens that America is no exception. The good news is we do have many, many people in America who do care. And we have many people in America who would like to see everyone be able to do well, regardless of color, regardless of nationality, regardless of gender. But unfortunately, it seems like the people who are against, who are opposed to having the vast majority of Americans do well, are the ones who are winning the battle. So as a result, the Affordable Care Act, which was put into place to help so many people, and that was helping so many people, hated by many people, and not just by Republican politicians in Washington, D.C., hated by many people, including people who are not politicians. Loved the fact that children in school could be on the parents' insurance up to age 26. Loved the fact that Medicare was covering more expenses for older parents. Loved the fact that insurance companies could not drop people because a new condition popped up. Loved the fact that insurance companies couldn't shut people out because of pre-existing conditions, but hated the Affordable Care Act, hated Obamacare, when Obamacare, of course, as Republicans know, was just another name for Affordable Care Act, but they knew that a lot of people hated the fact that there was a black president in the White House, and so they used hatred to their advantage and gave it a name, Obamacare, knowing that there were people who hate Obama, who hated the man, not because he had done anything to them, but because he's black. And so they used that to their advantage, to the nation's disadvantage. The people loved those individual benefits that were part of, that made up Obamacare. But when you gave it that name, when you let them know that all that was part of Obamacare, oh no, I hate Obamacare. What confusion on their part. What confusion. They loved all those benefits, but they hated Obamacare. When Obamacare was the name of all those benefits. The Affordable Care Act was the name of all those benefits. So they loved it and hated it at the exact same time. They loved what they hated and hated what they loved. And you start talking about more people being put off the insurance rolls if you could just get rid of Obamacare, get rid of the Affordable Care Act. And they love that. They you bring a smile to their hearts and faces when you talk like that. What is it about human beings that makes so many people like that? The Apostle Paul wrote to his protege, Timothy. And this is part of what he said in the second letter to Timothy, third chapter, beginning at verse 1. Mark this. There will be terrible times in the last days. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. So when you hear this, having a form of godliness but denying its power, you know that they're talking about people who will be claiming to be followers of Christ, having a form of godliness, not a form of religion. That's not what he said. The Apostle Paul said these people will have a form of godliness, but they will deny the power of godliness. True godliness empowers us to think like God, to be like God, to want what he wants, to pursue what he would pursue if he were on this earth. But they're not going to be pursuing what God pursues. They're not going to be pursuing according to the written word of God. They're going to be pursuing in a different direction. Why? Because these same people who have a form of godliness will be without love. The English Standard Version says heartless. They will be heartless. These same people, remember now, let me read it to you again, so that you know that this connection that I'm making is not contrived, is real. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And it goes on to describe these same people, and it says in the fifth verse, having a form of godliness, but denying its power. These people will have a form of godliness, a form, but they will be lovers of themselves. They will have a form of godliness, but they will be abusive and heartless. And because they will be abusive, brutal, heartless, without love, it will be easy for them to make the kinds of decisions that tear families apart, and to applaud those who do such things. Because, and again, they're not talking about the people here who never portray themselves as being godly people. These are the people who will have the form. They will put themselves out there as being godly people. They will have a form of godliness. They'll talk the talk. They'll go to church. They'll call themselves Christians. They'll have the form, but they will reject the power of godliness. True godliness brings power to be the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. True godliness living in a person empowers that person to care, to be compassionate, to be sensitive. But when we have only the form, and that's all we want is the form, it's easy. It's easy to reject the good. I'll be right back.